you know, people were telling me a couple weeks ago, you're not talking about Nashville enough, like all their guys could go. And I think now, you know, Saros, as you said, Novak getting done. And I think it's possible there are going to be more that get done. I don't think that...
I wonder about Trenin.
I just think, Jeff, it's possible that Novak isn't the only... I don't know to handicap it, but someone just said to me, don't be surprised if Novak isn't the only extension announced this week. I mean, we'll see where it goes. Nothing's done until it's done. But, then you know, the Novak thing is a big letdown. I saw in Ring Fries, you mentioned the Rangers. Yes. I think he was on Vancouver's list, too, and I don't think they were the only ones. I think there were a few teams looking at him. But... you know, someone said to me they might add, and I'm like, what? And they go, not hugely expensive, but they might add. You know, the Predators, you know, all of a sudden the Predators are feeling something.
That was Elliot
feeling
Friedman.
Something.
Feeling it. They're vibing.
I'll tell you what, I was feeling something in that Cody Glass thing that we played.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. Like when you think about sports... and how that, I don't know how that happened. Like I went from, hey, what a fun win, to I was fighting back it was like you're watching the movie and all of a sudden the person next to you starts
crying,
getting emotional, and all of a sudden it just starts happening. And it was like 17,000 people that was happening to. And it's hard to explain it, but, you know, there's that old school thinking of, there's no crying in baseball. Remember that whole thing with Tom Hanks? But that's kind of like old school tough guy. You don't show your emotions. But Cody Glass has always been one of those guys that you appreciate the fact that he wears his heart on his sleeve. Always has. He talks about it. He's talked about his mental struggles through the injuries, trying to find his game. Remember that moment in the behind, I forget what it was called, whatever it was called, when they told him he made the team before they went to Prague and he broke down in tears there. It's like... everybody kind of had it back in their mind. They kind of filed it away. And then he has that game. And it all came pouring out. And I was up there. I'm like, I hope they don't put me on camera anytime soon because I'm gone.
Yeah.
It's over. It took me a while to recover. But I was so charged up like everybody was, like he was, because he could feel it. That's just a cool moment in sports. That's why you love sports.
Mm-hmm. It was an emotional moment, and I knew that standing ovation from the fan base. It wasn't just a, look at you with three goals.
Yeah.
Like, what a good game. It was a, we know how hard this road has been for you, and this just feels like you get rewarded for all of the stuff, the healthy scratches, the difficult road. You know, it just felt very cathartic, and it was such a cool, cool environment and a cool thing to witness. But joining us now is Adam Vingan. Adam, I wanted to touch on what Elliot Friedman had to say there on the 32 Thoughts podcast. A lot of tidbits in there, but let's focus in on Tommy Novak. Sounds like the deal is very close to being done. Penn just hasn't hit paper quite yet, but it sounds like ahead of the trade deadline, Tommy Novak and the Predators will get a deal worked out. What do you think is the right term and right money on the Predators side of things?
It's hard to say because, as Willie and I discussed earlier today, there isn't an obvious comparable for Tommy Novak because he's a late bloomer. He's soon to be 27, if I recall correctly. He's only been in the league for a few years, but he's been highly productive in those few years. So I did some research this morning looking to see if there were any recent contract signings of players that have the same profile as Tommy Novak, and it was really hard to find one. I heard Elliot Friedman on your show within the past couple of weeks talking about how Tommy Novak could potentially command a cap hit in the fours, which when I heard that, I did a bit of a double take, just because I thought it was a bit too rich for someone who doesn't have a ton of games in the NHL. Now, when I was thinking about what that contract would look like if I were negotiating it, you know, I thought of two contracts the Predators have signed in recent years that I feel like provide somewhat of a framework. I'm thinking of the Colton Sissons contract, which was a 7-year contract with a cap hit just south of $3 million, and the Calle Järnkrok contract, which was a 6-year contract with a cap hit of $2 million. And what I landed on was this, and you guys can tell me if you think this is reasonable. If I were in Barry Trotz's shoes, I would offer Tommy Novak a 5-year contract with a cap hit of $3 million a season. I think that it's a significant raise from the $800,000 he's currently making. And it also protects the Predators a little bit, because although Novak has been very productive on a points per game basis since becoming a regular NHL player, it's still a relatively small sample of 100 plus games. So it protects the Predators in that sense. So I think it would be fair. It also gives Novak some security. I think 5 years gives, you know, will take him until he's early 30s. So I think 5 years, $15 million, somewhere in that range, would be something I would be comfortable giving Tommy Novak at this point.
I'm with you, Adam. I think that that is fair on both sides. But when Elliot Friedman joined our show a couple weeks ago, he mentioned a potential deal that he was hearing about Tommy Novak was in the fours. Now, in the fours can mean a lot of different things. It could mean $4 million, or it could mean $4.9 million, and those are two very different things. When I first heard that, I thought, no way, $4 million plus for Tommy Novak, that is just too rich for my blood. But I also understand the other side of it, where the Predators aren't really in a position right now to give up players or trade players that can score, that can create offense. So if it did come down to, let's say, 4 years, $4 million, $16 million deal as a whole, is that something that you think that you could live with? Is that something that if you were Barry Trotz, you would say, okay, fine, I think we can do $4
million? It's a good question, and all things being equal, that would be roughly the same contract that the Predators signed Ryan O'Reilly to in free agency, which was 4 years, four and a half. And for some reason, I just have a hard time paying Tommy Novak that much. I agree with you, Caroline, that Novak, you know, it has a lot of offensive talent, and the goal he scored the other night was something to behold. But I look at the fact that he's only played 129 games in the NHL, and that gives me pause about, you know, committing a lot of money to him. Now, $4 million in the grand scheme of things with the cap going up and all of that, is that a lot of money? No. But for me, I still think something in the three range would be more desirable for me as an armchair general manager than something in the fours.
And so you'd be willing to get a little more term in exchange to keep that cap number
more
down. So,
yeah.
D-Max, what do you think as Tommy Novak's on-air agent, as we had this segment last year? Is that more in your ballpark here?
No. As an agent, I'm trying to get that number higher.
So you want four.
Yeah, I want four. Why not? I mean, I heard Adam, you know, I understand the concern about not only playing so many games thus far as a NHL player, but that also can mean a plus. You know, yes, I've only played this many games, which means I got a lot of games left, and you're just seeing the tip of it, what I could potentially do. I'm not sure the Predators are in a position to not give him close to what he wants. Now, whether it's $3.5 million, $4 million, I always say, listen, the market will tell you how much you're worth. If you're worth four and somebody's willing to pay it, then so be it. I'm not sitting here to tell you you're not worth it. But the Predators, I don't think, are in a position to really kind of go back and forth, because they need goal scorers, and he's turned out to be a damn good one for them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Derek, in the sense that when you look at what Novak's been able to do, it is really impressive. And as I said earlier, the fact that he's been able to do it as a late bloomer, I typed in Tommy Novak numbers into the cap friendly contract comparable tool earlier today, which is a fabulous resource. And one of the most recent contracts that came up as a comparable was the contract that Nick Paul signed with the Tampa Bay Lightning a couple of years ago. I believe it was like a 7-year deal with a cap hit around like 3.15, 3.2. But Paul had been in the league longer, and his points per game numbers were much lower than Novak's. And I think Paul, and Willie can correct me on this, I think Paul plays a top six role in Tampa Bay, definitely a middle six role, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, I think Novak probably earned a little bit more than that, just because of how he's been able to do in a short span of time, which may be contradicting myself, which is why I would not be a good agent. But I still land in the 3 to 3.5. I mean, when I go to 3.5, mm-hmm. 5 years, 3.5, I might be comfortable doing that. But I would keep the top. I would keep the first number in negotiations of 3. I would not get it into the 4s.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they are trying to keep it as low as possible, and I get that part from a franchise. You want to be able to pay a guy what you think he's worth, and then the guy's on the other side looking for something else. What do you contribute? Take out the YouTube deal.
Yeah, the psychological part. Yeah.
What do you contribute? Because we've been discussing this, Adam, in the first segment. What do we contribute this winning streak to? Because it seems like everybody – you know, like Willie said, everybody's playing as a team. Everyone's pulling the rope in the same direction. It seems like everybody has figured out, at least from the outside in, everyone's figured out their role on this team. And now that UC's is playing a lot better, playing the way that we, you know, thought he would play at the beginning of the season, this team has looked like a much different hockey team.
I think goaltending stands out first and foremost. Mm-hmm. I mean, UC Saros has been outstanding over the past couple of weeks, looking like the goaltender we've seen in the past few seasons, especially that season, the shortened season when they were one of the worst teams in the league midway through, and then their second half they were incredible, and UC Saros was a significant reason for that. So he certainly can't discount the goaltending. The other thing I'm looking at is the balance of scoring. They've had 16 different players score a goal during this winning streak, and they have 10 players with at least 5 points. That is incredible balance, and that's what you need to win at this time of year. So, it's easy to say, you hear coaches say it all the time, you need to get 4 lines going, yada, yada, yada. Well, that's what they're doing right now. You know, that fourth line with McCarron and Sherwood and Smith has been really good. I think the problem with this team at the start of the season or up until the winning streak was they were largely a one-line team. Now, Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, and Gus Nyquist were one of the most productive lines in the NHL in terms of the number of goals scored when they were on the ice, but they weren't getting anywhere near that same production from any of their other lines. And now you're getting it from everyone. I think you also have to look at what Roman Josi has been doing. And, I mean, Roman Josi, I thought, was solid in his first 40 games of the season. He was putting up points, not as much as he's putting up now, but he was still putting up points. I looked this up the other day. This was before the Colorado game. So in his first 40 games of the season, the Predators had an on-ice goal differential of 50%. When he was on the ice at 5-on-5. They had allowed 29 goals and scored 29 goals when he was on the ice at 5-on-5. So since then, so that's 21 games, the following 21 games, it was 28 goals for and 14 goals against. So it went from 50-50 to two-thirds of all 5-on-5 goals scored with Roman Josi on the ice were going towards the Predators. So I think you're seeing Roman Josi play like the Norris Trophy winner that he has been. So I think when you combine all of those things, it's a perfect storm, and that's why the Predators are in the position they're in.
Adam Bingen is with us. Adam, you recently did a little research piece for Sportsnet on exactly what was going on with Saros based on the stats, and you uncovered a couple of things. Tell us what's going on there, because everybody's kind of wondering why a goalie like him all of a sudden has the light go on. Sometimes you can't control how the puck is bouncing, but there are things you can look at.
Yeah, for sure. And the one thing I noticed when looking at UC Saros' season, and this story was written early last week, so it was after the road trip. So it was before any of the home games. It was before the Ottawa game that I wrote this story. And when I was looking at his numbers, it wasn't like there wasn't one specific area necessarily where he was just so much worse than he was last season that was tanking his numbers. Really, there were just little dips in multiple categories that were contributing to his struggles. But one area that I did see that did stand out to me was his save percentage on screened shots from the point. He was one of the worst goalies in the league. I set the parameters at 64 goalies because each team, 32 teams, two goalies. So I set it top 64 goalies in the league in terms of ice time. Staros was 63rd out of 64 goalies in save percentage on screen shots from the point. The only goalie that was worse at the time was Jonas Johansson, who's the backup goaltender in Tampa Bay, who was the starting goaltender for the Lightning when Andrei Vasilevskiy missed the start of the season. And it was a significant dip from last year where Staros was in the top 15, I think, in that same category at a 64 goalie. So for whatever reason, on long-range shots where he was screened, he was having a hard time making saves. Now, I haven't looked to see how he's done since then, but his numbers during the winning streak are so much better, as you might imagine, both his normal statistics and his fancy stats. But I think for Staros, it was just, you know, last year he stole so many games for this team. He led the league in goaltending steals last season. He has not been on top of his game as much this season, but this recent winning streak has sort of set things back into where we expect them to be with UC Saros.
Adam, it is so great to have you on our airwaves. We appreciate you for stopping by, and we'll chat with you soon.
All right. Thanks, Caroline.